The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The bodybuilding world will never be the same.
Get ready for MD Radio with your host, Sean Ray. We'll take you inside the world of health and fitness with a focus on bodybuilding. Now, here's your host, Sean Ray.
All right, welcome everybody back to another episode of MD Radio as we count things down, headed into our 50th anniversary of the Joe Weider Mr. Olympia, which got started back in 1965 with the late Larry Scott, won the first two, 65 and 66, and of course, Sergio Oliva, the Cuban, came in and actually retired Larry Scott. He even said so in the documentary Evolution of Bodybuilding. Larry Scott was quoted as saying he saw Sergio Oliva, and that was it. He just too many genetic gifts for him to compete with, and effectively quit and retired from the Olympia competition. And Sergio would go on to win three straight until he ran into a juggernaut in the form of Arnold Schwarzenegger, who wound up winning seven. Or somewhere along the way, Arnold took a little sabbatical. His training partner, Franco Colombo, went on to win the 1976 Mr. Olympia, followed by the Sultan of Symmetry, Frank Zane. And he would win for 77, 78, and 79. And Arnold would come out of retirement to shock the world in what many consider a very controversial Mr. Olympia. We'll get to that. I don't think 1980 was very controversial at all. I got an expert on the phone. I'd like to get his opinion when we get back to that. But Arnold would win in Sydney, Australia, for the seventh and final time. To be followed again by his former training partner, which I consider to be the more controversial of the two Mr. Olympia wins. 1981, Franco Colombo would come back from a devastating knee injury to hold Tom Platz at bay and win the 81 Mr. Olympia. In 1982, we would see Chris Dickerson, the oldest Mr. Olympia ever at that time, at 43 years young, would win in London the Mr. Olympia. And then in 1983, we'd circle back to Munich, and Samir, the Lion of Lebanon, would win his first and only Mr. Olympia title as he was followed by one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time, Lee Haney. The year I graduated high school, 1984, he would reel off eight consecutive wins all the way into the 1991 and retire at a tender age of 31 years old. And a little known fact that people don't understand is that in 1983, Lee Haney's first Olympia, he was beaten by the Egyptian. The guy was 5'3", barely 170 pounds, Muhammad McAway, but nobody would catch up to him after that, and he would be followed by what would be at the time the biggest Mr. Olympia before he would retire in the form of Dorian Yates. He would win six consecutive Olympias before the big nasty, as Lonnie Tipa would call him. Ronnie Coleman would reel off eight to tie Lee Haney and get upset in 2006 by Jay Cutler, who rattled off four. But along the way, Jay would get upset by Dexter the Blade Jackson in 2008, the recipient of the Sean Ray 2014 Lifetime Achievement Award just a couple of short days ago in Maryland. But Jay would come back to reclaim the title, something that very few Mr. Olympia ever can do. And Jay Cutler did that, and now we are left with the middle, or maybe even the beginning, of Phil Heath's run with a three-peat going for number four this September at the 50th anniversary. That brings us up to speed on all our Olympians. Let's bring on an expert that knows a thing or two about the athletes and the sport, the Swami, who received the Golden Mike Award at the Sean Ray Classic over the weekend for all his years of service and dedication. The guy's virtually emceed every show out there known to mankind and has been doing it for 25, 30-plus years strong. Ironman writer, contest promoter, he's a Elvis Presley impersonator, and every once in a while, you know, he can actually sing. Let's bring on Swami, Lonnie Tipa. Welcome back to MB Radio.
Baby, let me be your loving. Oh, I'm sorry. I was watching that nice slideshow you did of me, and it had teddy bear in the background. I got a little excited there.
The thing about it is you're still singing off key. You got to, you know, take it up and off.
Well, I'm consistent. But I want to say is I'm very impressed with that speech you just gave in the history of the Olympia. A little stunning there, rattling off one after another.
Yeah, well, the thing is, Lonnie, I was born in 1965, the year Malcolm X was gunned down in the middle of the civil rights movement, right after the Bay of Pigs. Of course, you had the Beatles coming over here to America with the Beatlemania stuff going on, and a lot of things were going on in 1965, and I did that documentary on the evolution of bodybuilding, and I just found Larry Scott, and I had to talk to each and every one of these Olympia winners, and they took me right there to, like, what was happening in that time for them at that age. To see Larry Scott being so nostalgic, telling a story about winning the Mr. Olympia in Brooklyn, and Lou Ferrigno recounting that, sitting in the audience and watching that happen, it was almost like I was there. It was like being transported back in time, so I got a very good recollection of these older guys leading all the way back to Phil Heath. He's telling me the story about their journey through it. So it burned into my mind because I only read about it in the magazine and heard stories from yourself and Bill Reynolds and Bill Dobbins and other people, you know, Don Ross, that they could only kind of talk about it. But these guys were telling me. And so I have a very strong, vivid memory of what it was like for them. But for you, Lonnie, I mean, you didn't really get into the game until the 70s, correct?
No, I started following it. My first contest I ever saw was 1975. It was at the Embassy Auditorium down in L.A. The only reason I even went is a guy that I met in the gym named Barney Henderson was competing. And I remember parking my car and walking, and I saw John Brown walking into the auditorium. I'd seen him in the magazines, your future mentor, John Brown.
Right.
I said, wow. And Barney Henderson, of course, I became friends with him and used to go to the beach with him and his two sons, Tommy and Danny Henderson. If the name Danny Henderson sounds familiar, he's the MMA champion, Dangerous Dan Henderson. He was a six-year-old kid who I met was taken to the beach. How did I know he's going to be one of the toughest guys in the world? But I started writing for the magazines in 1983 for Muscle and Fitness.
Okay.
So I really started following the contest closer. Here's a great story for you. I met a guy at Cal State LA in 1975. I got hired as sports information director, and I was at the top of King Hall where the cafeteria was, because you know how I like to eat. And I had a banana split in my hand, and I saw this guy walk by, and I said, "You look like Frank Zane." And it was Frank Zane. And he was getting his master's at Cal State LA. This was 75. Uh-huh. And I told him, man, you know, I think I upset him, because I said, man, that Schwarzenegger's unbelievable, that guy. He was saying, well, he's big, you know. And as you just said, Frank went on to win the Olympia, 77, 78, and 79. So I had a future Olympia guy right there in the cafeteria with me at Cal State LA. But, you know, two of the champions that you mentioned, Arnold and Lee Haney, they really retired at a very young age, in their prime, really. And if they wanted to keep on going, how many could they have won?
I think at the time that they were winning, the challenge wasn't as great. I think it was probably greater for Lee Haney when he stepped away because the emergence of Dorian Yates, and of course Kevin Lebrone would soon be coming into the fray along with Lex Wheeler and a few others. And although Haney probably could have gone on a little bit more, I honestly believe that Lee Haney probably would have got a very tough challenge from Dorian Yates in 1993. I believe Lee Haney would have beat him in 1992. It doesn't say a lot where I was, because once they abandoned the drug test after 1990, I mean, Lee Haney was a different bodybuilder in 91, and I'm sure 92 probably would have been a carbon copy, and that would have been good enough to hold Dorian at bay. But 1993, I think we were all overwhelmed with what Dorian did in 1993. An injury-free Dorian Yates would have been a formidable foe for Lee Haney at his best, and that would have been a contest I would have had a front-row seat at. But Flex Wheeler, again, was his all-time best at that 1993 Arnold Classic. So there's so many variables as to what could have happened. I mean, look what Phil Heath is doing. At what, 34, 35 years old?
He's 34, yeah. He's right there in his prime.
Yeah, and Lee Haney walked away before
31.
He was 34. So he would have had at least a couple more years to really do crazy things with his body that he didn't. It made it a little more interesting amongst the have-nots in the form of me, Flex, and Ken. But Dorian Yates closed the door in 93, I think.
I emceed that Olympia. That was my first Olympia that I emceed, and mm-hmm. Dorian was an absolute monster backstage, and I went to him and I said, "You look phenomenal." Well, the first comment was, "Why didn't you pick me in your column to win the show then?" He was really upset. I did my Olympia predictions, and, you know, I always would pick other people other than the blatant favorite to make it interesting. Mm-hmm. And he was really upset. He said, "You know, I cut that column out and put it on my refrigerator before I headed down to the gym." And I said, "Well, I'm glad I contributed to your, you know, your success. Can I have part of your winnings?"
Yeah, I said the same thing about Ronnie Coleman after 1997, because mind you, I was second in 96 and third in 97, and Ronnie was a distant ninth place. And so for some reason, people were talking about Ronnie because he had beaten Flex on the tour and he'd beaten Kevin on the tour. And I thought, this is not a guy we have to be worried about. I put him at 100-1 long shot. And of course, he had me with my foot in my mouth by the time the show was over. But it's interesting at what some bodybuilders hang on to for motivation and who they actually get motivated by. You are a guy many people consider like the bodybuilding dictionary. You knew everything and everyone. And so when you said something, the athletes clung to that as the gospel. And if they weren't in your good graces, they had reason to be concerned. So I know Paul Dillette wanted to wring your neck one year, and Flex Miller wanted to ask you.
We got to go way back before then. You know, Mike Quinn wanted to kill me. And
Mike Quinn, yeah.
Gary Strider won. When Gary won the Night of Champions in his pro debut,
yeah,
I saw him at Gold's Venice, and I made a mistake of saying, "Boy, you barely held on to that one." You know, he wasn't real crisp. He had gotten bigger, and Ashley was very detailed. I said, you were fortunate to hold on," or something like that. He went nuts.
Yeah, some of the guys, I mean, you stick your neck out, you leave it, you know, you're liable to have somebody try to chop it off. But making bold predictions and adding the moniker Swami made things interesting, if nothing else. And you obviously found out who was reading the columns and who was paying attention, because there's a lot of fans, a lot of yes people in this sport that take that for granted. There's a lot of people that tell it like it is, and they get the respect more often than not when the careers are over from the bodybuilders, because they're so emotionally connected.
Well,
and
Sean, and as you know, I came from a mainstream sports writing background, and you are a great athlete and a follower of sports, and you read Sports Illustrated like I do. On the plane trip to your show Saturday, which I want to compliment you on, by the way, it was an outstanding event at Goucher College in Maryland, I had this Sports Illustrated's issue. You may have even seen it. It's got the top 25 teams prediction, you know, and they pick the top 25. They're not ever totally right.
Right.
They do that in all sports, you know, and it does do make it interesting. I did it to add entertainment value to the event. And everybody got, I remember I wrote a Mr. Olympia prediction for Flex Magazine right when I first started. And I was strongly encouraged to pick Rich Gasperi to beat Lee Haney. Now, I didn't really feel that was going to happen, but I got kind of talked into it. And so I picked Rich, put Haney second. I went to cover the men's nationals for Ironman. That's a year Gary won, year before you took the title. And this hand was on my shoulder, and I looked up, and it was Lee Haney. He said, "Are you Lonnie Teeper?" I said, "Yes." He goes, "Well, I'm the guy that you said is going to lose the Olympia. And you picked Rich Gasparri, I'm going to crush him like a gnat." You know, and I'm going, "I'm just kidding, Lee. I'm just kidding." You know, but they do take it. I mean, the Wheeler one year at the USA, as you know, Dillette was upset with me. Wheeler was upset with me. And Wheeler said the same thing that you just said a few minutes ago. He says, "You have so much clout that when you make a statement, it carries a lot of weight." And I said, "That's not true. Because every time I was picking somebody other than the favorite, they never won."
Well, and I got to tell you, Lonnie, at the end of the day, some guys are a little bit too close to the action. I know from experience, being retired 13 years now, they do respect it, because we do get compliments from all over the world and from different people, but the ones that are actually knowledgeable about the sport, when we hear something derogatory or negative or just even constructive criticism, we take it a little bit more personal, because we like to think that we're friends, like to think that we're supporting each other, and then we hear something critical about ourselves, and some of the guys, they just kind of wear their emotions on their sleeve, and you literally make an enemy out of a friend by not picking them. It kind of sucks, but when they're all done, I even had Craig Titus come back to me and say, thank you for, you know, critiquing me honestly. And this is a guy that wanted to kill me on numerous occasions, no pun intended. Yeah, and you. But that's the nature of the sport. The one thing I can't say that about is the Olympians. Now, a lot of the Mr. Olympia winners, and there's only 13 of them in the 49, 50-year history, and there could potentially be a 14th joining the ranks if Phil Heath stubs his toe and gets sick and can't make it to the show. But if this remains the same and Phil Heath does go on to win number four, it's not a real big ripple, you know, in the ocean. He's only halfway to Ronnie Coleman and Lee Haney, and this guy is 34. He literally was to be a 40-year bodybuilder in the year 2019 to break this record, and we just did a prediction on that. Now, you're the Swami. I predicted this guy probably wants to get out healthy, happy, and wealthy, and he doesn't need 9 Olympia titles to be there. I'm not sure the motivation in today's bodybuilding is the same as it was back when you're young, like Lee Haney or Arnold in your 20s. You think that Phil Heath is driven by record number 8? He has to get 9 to beat it, but do you think, number one, does he have the ability to drive himself that long?
I don't know Phil that well on a personal level. I calculated that he gets number 9 at 39. And, you know, in years past, that was old. You retired at 36.
Yeah.
Dorian retired at 35. Wheeler around 35. But we saw a guy at your contest Saturday night, Dexter Jackson, who got the Lifetime Achievement Award from you. And you coaxed him into taking a shirt off and posing. And the guy's going to be 45 years old in November, and he looked as good to me as he's ever looked. So 39 years old is not that old anymore. Can Heath win that 9? I think he can.
I mean, I think on paper he can, but when I put it in perspective, he just lost his father. His wife is battling back for some cancer issues. He's just launched a supplement company in the throes of his career. There's a lot of money on the table, and there's a lot of business to be done. Is the willpower and the drive going to be there 5 years from now as it is now? I just don't know that he needs that much, or he's driven that much by the title. I've talked to Phil, and he's very much a businessman. He seems more like a diplomat. He seems like a congressman, somebody that has everything really calculated, but he doesn't sound like a Dexter Jackson. Dexter is a different breed. He's a Tony Freeman's type. He's a Vince Taylor type. I'm not so sure that Phil Heath is that type, but I want to talk more about that after commercial break, Lonnie. I got the Swami on the phone, the recipient of the Golden Mike Award at the Sean Ray Classic over the weekend. We're going to come back and talk about what went down at the third annual out in Maryland. Plus, there's some other bodybuilding news and information coming up because we have the North America's coming up at the end of the month. And, of course, tomorrow we got Raise in Asia. We'll be back with Lonnie Cheaper after this commercial break here at MD Radio.
This is Lonnie Teeper from Iron Man Magazine, the greatest of all time. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Focus, strength, recovery, results. Introducing Maximize, brought to you by iForce Nutrition. Tired of the same old caffeine buzz? Are you ready to step into a new world of power, energy, and intensity? Maximize has set a new standard in the supplement world, delivering tunnel vision focus, cell swelling volumization, and unstoppable endurance. Don't settle for the current crop of underclothes products. It's time to join the next generation with Maximize, the only pre-workout supplement you need for extreme gains in strength and performance. Don't just train. Maximize your workouts. Visit www.iforcenutrition.com for details.
Over the years, iForce Nutrition has brought you some of the most powerful muscle-building products ever seen in the bodybuilding world. Now, after years of research and development, we are proud to introduce our first launch into the world of thermogenic fat loss with Adipoxil. Adipoxil isn't your run-of-the-mill fat burner. Adipoxil is new and rewriting the definition of fat loss. Adipoxil's competition strength formula is so powerful In one cycle, you can go from soft to shredded. When being lean isn't enough, get shredded with Adipoxyl. For more information, visit iForceNutrition.com.
With over 300 locations and 2 million members worldwide, Powerhouse Gym has been helping people achieve their goals since 1975. Whether you're visiting the gym for the first time or you're a seasoned professional, you'll see why Powerhouse Gym is the strongest name in fitness. Visit PowerhouseGym.com to get a free guest pass to a location closest to you or to inquire about opening your own Powerhouse Gym location. At Powerhouse Gym, you're not just a number, you're family.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you've ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like some banned substances, but rest assured, there's nothing illegal in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB living legend Flex Wheeler. And now you too can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Hey, this is Seth Ferrosi, IFBB Pro, and you're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Everyone knows that beef is king when it comes to building quality muscle mass. Now you can have all the anabolic power of beef with Carnivore. Beef protein isolate from muscle mass, packed with 20 times the creatine of steak and loaded with extra BCAAs. Carnivore is more concentrated than whey. Beef up with Carnivore, the most sought after muscle building protein ever created. For more information, visit MuscleMadsRx.com.
You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray. If you want to get in on the action, call Team MD now at 1-866-472-5788. Now back to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
I'm the truth and these other boys.
All right, I got the Swami LT on the phone. We are talking 50th anniversary of the Joe Weider Mr. Olympia, but I would be remiss if I didn't break the news. Over the weekend, we had the passing of one of the bodybuilding extraordinaires in the form of Mike Matarazzo by way of Boston, who lost his father not too long ago to heart failure. And Mike was actually on the waiting list for a heart donor. He had had complications with his heart for many years and had struggled with that for a long time. And nobody could really put their finger on exactly why he had a bad heart, but apparently he did mention that he had heart problems in his family, that it was running in his family. But his dad passed away at 71. It was his biggest fan. When Mike Matarazzo talked about bodybuilding, he always pretty much started every sentence with "my father this and my father that," which told you the reverence that he had for his dad. And at 48 years young, Mike would pass away on the same birthday of the celebrate, or the same date, I should say, as the celebrated death of Elvis Presley. So how befitting is that? Delonte Teeper, him seeing the Sean Ray Classic on the remembrance of Elvis Presley and tragedy of a life cut short in the form of Mike Matarazzo. Lonnie Teeper, Mike Matarazzo, I remember he won the overall USA Championships right here in Santa Monica, holding off a young upstart by the name of Flex Wheeler. Flex Wheeler said after that loss, if he didn't win in 1992, that he was actually going to retire from bodybuilding. He couldn't have been merely 25 or 26, but no one saw Mike Matarazzo coming from Boston to beat somebody like Flex Wheeler with Flex's pedigree, already a Mr. California champion. You were there.
Well, I first heard about Matarazzo actually in 1989 on the subject of Elvis. The Junior Nationals were in Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I went there, and Paul DeMeo was in the contest. And, you know, the late Paul DeMeo, the name I gave him, Quadzilla, for those humongous thighs, yeah. He was raving about this fellow Bostonian by the name of Mike Matarazzo. He was showing me these pictures, and he goes, "You can't believe this guy's calves. You can't believe this guy's arms. If this guy dedicates himself to the sport, he'll be a pro." Fast forward 2 years, I'm at the Los Angeles Championships, 1991. An upstart named Dennis Newman takes the show. And Mike Quinn sitting a row behind me, he wanted to kill me again for something at that point. So he wasn't talking directly to me, but he was saying it real loud. And Matt Araza was with him. He was kind of like his host. And he was telling everybody, this guy's going to win the USA. So I met the guy, and I said, I heard all about your calves. Let me see these calves. And they were, like, ridiculous. But I picked Wheeler to win the show. You know, Mike had tremendous arms, tremendous calves. He got in good condition, but how could you beat Flex Wheeler? Well, he did, because Flex was not at his best. And Matt Araza did take the 91 USA. I think he actually competed in the Olympia that year. He went right from the USA to the Olympia and didn't do well. But he did the Ironman Pro. The first time I got to introduce him was the 92, I believe, Ironman Pro. He got fifth. And he went on to have a good pro career. He was ninth at the Olympia one year. He was sixth at the Arnold. Had a couple second-place finishes in some smaller shows. And he was basically done by 2001. And he had heart problems, like you mentioned, for the past decade. He actually had two previous bypass surgeries. One was a triple bypass surgery, and it was in his family. So, you know, you were the one that broke the news to me. We're on the plane going back to Cali from Baltimore, and he had passed, but it really didn't shock me because I knew he was in really bad shape and was up at Stanford awaiting a heart transplant. And 48 years old, it's sad. You know, Paul DeMeo died at 37 of a drug overdose in 2005. Two of the guys that really brought the excitement to the stage as these freaks are both gone. You know, rest in peace to both of them.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, when one tragedy like that happens, I mean, we're also on the heels of mourning one of the greatest comedians in the form of Robin Williams. But when these guys die, you know, it seems like the public at large just runs straight to the steroid factor. I mean, ignoring all the other, you know, precipitating issues that were already waiting Mike Matarazzo, just probably genetically, inherently, and yet he went on and fought through a lot of things to win, you know, the Mr. USA, travel the world and become a household name in the world of bodybuilding, as it were. And, you know, the guy passes away from, I don't think he's been bodybuilding for how long? When did Mike get out of the game? It was like 2004, 2003.
2001, I think, was his last show. But he did have a history of heart disease. And plus, the way he ate, he said he would eat 6-7 pounds of red meat a day.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he did that into retirement. But again, I love red meat too, and what's good for one guy is poison to another guy. But at the end of the day, it's tragic no matter how you cut it. He could have been 75 years old and died of heart failure, and it's still too young when you're this healthy. It serves as a notice, and I remember the big Mike Catt, star of Pumping Iron back in the day, told me when the passing of John Kemper of a heart attack, he said, you know, you young guys got to get your hearts checked out. You don't wait till you're a certain age to get it checked out. Go get a checkup. It doesn't, you know, cost a lot. It's just a little bit of time, but some things can be dealt with, avoided, or at least precipitated, but nothing can stop you in your tracks faster than an actual heart attack. So I think the message here, if Mike left anything behind for any of us to pay attention to, is that we only got one heart, and make sure that we get it checked up and make sure that things are working right. And maybe, you know, you could save a couple years on your life by checking that out. Now, this is a guy that was waiting for a transplant. You very rarely hear of a heart transplant. I do believe, if I'm not mistaken, Lonnie, that Paul Love, promoter out of San Jose, actually had a full heart transplant. He's alive and kicking today.
He actually did. Yes, he did, and he's doing well.
Yeah, I mean, you can survive these types of things, but timing is everything. And of course, we'll be talking about Mike as we head to the Olympia. He was one of those guys that will be remembered for his appearance on that Olympia stage. There's been a lot of Olympia winners, but it's the Olympians that give validation to those Olympia winners. And Mike Matarazzo will forever be remembered and associated with the Joe Weaver Mr. Olympia weekend that was. Moving ahead, though, Lonnie, we got some other things. So we were out in Maryland. Of course, you don't like to travel all the way across the country. I get it. You've logged more miles than freaking like you probably care to remember. But getting out there to Maryland is my third annual. Last promotion I had was 2006 and 7 in Colorado. But you've been doing this for quite some time with the West Coast Classic in the summers over here in the Alhambra, East L.A. type area. And you came out to Maryland, and what did you walk into? How was that experience like for you?
I really, you know, had a really nice time. I wanted to say that The plane ride out was horrific. I had a six-month-old baby in my right ear for 5 hours, so I was ready to jump out of the plane, but that was the worst choice. I got there, and, you know, the people that you had working there were all so friendly, very nice people, starting from Huey picking me up at the airport. And the people at the hotel, the Sheraton North, you know, great, great hosts. And, you know, I ended up having a hell of a nice time. I met a lot of nice people. I enjoyed watching your event unfold. You've come a long way in the promotion area as well. Picked, a beautiful venue, the campus at Goucher College. And, you know, the show went well. You had a lot of outstanding competitors. You had an awesome crowd of both the judging and the finals. And, you know, we got it done early. And you took us out to eat a bunch of times, and I put on about 10 pounds. What else can I can't complain.
Yeah, it was a good time. And, you know, recognizing your body of work was something that I always wanted to do. But you had to be a certain age to actually get that recognition. But Dexter Jackson, he was an easy choice for me following Lee Haney last year in the Lifetime Achievement Award department because, you know, Lee Haney's body of work speaks for itself. I just wanted to be able to acknowledge him that, you know, when I graduated high school in 1984, he was a major part of why I wanted to be in the Mr. Olympia and ultimately want to try to be Mr. Olympia. So to have the opportunity to recognize him was one of the feathers in my hat and on my bucket list. Dexter Jackson, a competing bodybuilder who my last Olympia in 2001 was standing on stage and charging hard. I was a guy very consistent like he was. He actually, when he won the 2008 Mr. Olympia, he said, for all the guys that tried and never won, this one's for you. And that resonated. Flex Wheeler was standing next to me giving an ovation, crying, and it cut to my core because I remember Dexter Jackson starting out as a bantamweight, working his way through the ranks. And when we put up the resume from his career, and you pointed out that he was competed at 68 times as a pro, and once it was a top five or 162 of them. What was it?
Yeah, he was in that, the top five in 62 out of the 68 shows.
I mean, who does that? I mean, that validated to me and reminded me again that this was a guy worthy of a Lifetime Achievement Award on many different levels while he's still actively competing. A lot of people wait until guys are really old and can't really appreciate it. But as an athlete getting recognized while you're in the throes of Olympia preparation, this reward was long overdue based on how this guy's track record read. I mean, the English Grand Prix, the Australian Grand Prix, four Arnold Classics.
Oh, yeah, that resume was longer than my back, and you know how long that is.
Man, I was looking at it going, this is like the Declaration of Independence. Look how long.
That was a really nice thing. And getting back to the golden mic, the only thing wrong with the golden mic is it wasn't golden. But,
right.
It's beautiful crystal, man. I'm telling you, I cradled that thing all the way back on the airplane, and I looked at it, and I go, wow, this is really, really nice, and I really appreciate the kind thought, and it meant a lot, you know, and you're behind that mic a lot now, and emceeing shows all over the world, so.
And that's the thing. That's where I thought about bringing you on board, because, listen, I mean, I do it all around the world, and I do it for fun, because I like to be close to the action, but this was something that you did week in and week out for many, many years, and it was nonstop, the biggest of the biggest shows. I mean, hundreds of athletes in these shows. I've got a better appreciation for what you do, so I wanted to make sure that my audience got a chance. I don't know when the last time you emceed on the East Coast or in Maryland, but I knew that my crowd hadn't heard what it's like to have a contest start to finish run very smooth and professional. You did a great job, and I made the right choice in bringing you out there. So first, I want to say thank you for that, and second, that awards mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. But for me, giving something instead of receiving something, it feels even better because I know I don't typically give things away. You know I am. But in giving that award to you,
now you loosened up. You're pulling out that credit card all week, man, feeding a lot of people. I actually started feeling bad for you and didn't go to lunch after the prejudging.
Yeah.
I said, I'm not going to have him get stuck with my lunch bill again. I'm going to go over to the food court.
Yeah.
Around.
Well, you know, Team Sean Ray out there, I got to give them all a shout-out. Madison, my coordinator, and, of course, Mike and Teresa Davis came out from Virginia to represent, and Kate came down from upstate Maryland, and Kate Garvey helped out. And, of course, Jerry Ward and his girl, Carrie, helped out. I mean, so many people on so many different levels. Big Huey, they all came to volunteer their time and of their services. And, of course, our head expediter, Anthony Roberts, was Tony, I should say, had a very strong hold on the way things went. Of course, Rick Biardi did what he always does.
Rick Biardi is a super. J.M. Mannion was there. Yeah. I don't know how the J.M. was even there with the traveling. He wrote something on Facebook today that he's driven 2,461 miles in the last 2 weeks. And I told him I drove 7,400 miles dash for 2013.
Well, I can tell you, this is what the core of our industry is made up of. Diehard fans who are actually working the business side to keep everything going. What JM does, you know, is he watches dad do. So that apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, making sure that he's in five different places, you know, at one time so everybody gets a little bit of what they need.
Oh, he was all over. I mean, and you know, his daughter graduated from high school in June. She's now starting college. She's on the college soccer team. First game is next week. Tyler's at the University of Maryland. He's now a junior. I wish there was time, because as you know, me being a college teacher, I love to look at college campuses. I would have loved to have gone up to the University of Maryland, but there just wasn't time. I was too busy eating all the time at the Cheesecake Factory and the steak place.
Well, hey, I can relate to that, man, but we got a lot of very important things coming our way in the form of this upcoming Mr. Olympia Championship. And before we get there, we make a pit stop right there in Pittsburgh at the North America Championships, where several people will actually wind up getting IFBB Pro cards. Namely, Dexter Jackson came from the North America Championships, along with some other notables like Linda Murray and the late Ray McNeil.
That's what those numbers are. I talked with Gary Uta today via email. 965 and 120 in the pro division. I guess he's got some Masters pro events.
Yeah, he does. I'm curious to know how many of those are actually bodybuilders. The sports
120 team. Plus 965 right now in the other part of the show. Gary's blown up. I mean, he had just under 1,000 at the team collegiate Masters Nationals, so Pittsburgh's the spot these days.
Well, yeah, and then you got to be careful what you wish for. I mean, this was a show that almost got canceled altogether barely a decade ago.
Remember that? They were going to get rid of the North American.
I mean, and it yielded a lot of great champions. You know, you had Paul DeLette win that contest. Didn't Johnny Morant win that one?
Somebody named, I think, Linda Murray won it. And did Corey win the North American?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of great champions come out of the North America. I remember Sean Roden was in the North America. So, I mean, as recently as him, he had some great athletes come through there. Who's next? I'm not 100% sure.
Well, wasn't a young kid won it a year or two ago? He's only 21, 20. He was younger than you, actually.
Yeah, it's been a while since I was actually there because I've been, you know,
I think it was McCarver or something like that.
Yeah, Dallas McCarver.
21 years old. Youngest to get you're still the youngest to win the Nationals, but I guess he's now the youngest to win a pro card.
Yeah, an overall pro card. So that was huge on his part, and which, again, it leaves me scratching my head, Justin Compton and Evanston Pawnee, how you guys can be seeing out the Mr. Olympia. I mean, Justin's qualified by winning out there in April. He won the Europa show, and of course Evan is sitting on the sidelines waiting to grow. I guess he's already
won the Nationals 7-8 years ago. He's already grown.
Yeah, I don't know what he's waiting for, but anyways, everybody's got a reason for sitting on the sidelines. I just know I wouldn't be, not this year, considering going into this show. Kai Greene, it's got to be do or die for Kai Greene. I mean, we cannot keep waiting for this guy to beat Phil Heath. It's almost like, I think Kai Greene has more to prove at this show than Phil Heath. We expect Phil Heath to win, but where does that leave Kai Greene? Because a year ago, I had Dennis Wolf beating him.
Well, I may have Dennis Wolf beating him this year coming off that powerful win at the Arnold in March.
Well, yeah, but I did see an off-season Kai Greene, and He looks freaking sick. Two-time Arnold Classic winner. He's won the Australia Pro. He's won the New York Pro.
Oh, he's one of the best of all time.
Ray Classic. Well, and see, that's where, again, I feel very connected. I mean, Kai Greene's first pro win was the Sean Ray Classic in Colorado, and Phil Heath's first pro win was the Sean Ray Classic in Colorado.
That's
so
right.
I'm very connected. I'm very connected.
Great point in bodybuilding history.
I feel like, you know, I'm watching the fruits of my labor kind of come, you know, pay off. This right to me feels like the Thrilla in Manila, that highly anticipated, you know, rematch of Ali and Spinks, or, you know, even George Foreman and Ali. I use Ali because he was just so dominating, and right now I feel like Phil Heath is that guy. Kai Greene is the smoking Joe Frazier, and he is the George Foreman who, if he doesn't win, he's always going to be that guy that validated who and how great Phil Heath became. He's got to win the show.
Gary Query.
Does Kai Greene have to win this, or what?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I may be the Lone Ranger, but 2 years ago, I'm not saying that Phil didn't deserve to win. He's a tremendous bodybuilder. But I thought Kai Greene not should have won, but could have won.
Well, again, the Swami going back 2 years ago, while we still have a show coming up in 5 weeks, doesn't put it on the line. We'll take a commercial break here at MD Radio, come back, and see if the Swami can look ahead instead of Monday morning quarterbacking and looking back. I like to use Monday morning quarterback because football's coming up. It's right around the corner. Come back with more Bodybuilding Talk Radio here with the Swami Lonnie Teeper after this commercial break here at MD Radio.
This is Marcus Haley of The Common, and you're listening to MD Radio with Sugar Sean Ray.
Arginine and AAKG are dead.
Is over. MHP introduces NO-Bomb, the world's first clinically tested nitric oxide maximizing formula. Need to experience real workouts and pumps with NO-Bomb.
One of the guys that gives a lot of credit is Steve Blackman for muscular development. I mean, those guys have done an extraordinary job for years and years and years to promote health, to promote fitness, to promote strength, to promote bodybuilding, powerlifting, weightlifting, and all of those kind of things. So the contributions they made is gigantic, and I hail them for that.
Anyone who understands the supplement market knows that fat burners as a class of products are virtually dead. Why? Because none of these products have delivered the kind of real results people have been looking for. I'm not kidding when I tell you, that's all over now. Because Mitotropin is so powerful and so profoundly different than anything else on the market, we couldn't even call it a fat burner for fear it would be associated with this useless category. That's how good it is. Welcome to the world of Mitotropin.
This is IFB Pro Mike Valentino. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Run! Oh my God! Business as usual, man! I saw you! I saw you! Run!
For the best workout of your life, use Nox Pump, the strongest pre-workout powder in bodybuilding. Get Nox Pump at health food stores everywhere.
This is Jay Cutler, and you listen to Team MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Shop the new MD Supplement Superstore, where you can find more of your favorite brands and products, upgraded customer service, and engaging cutting-edge research, along with the industry's most competitive prices.
This is IFBB Pro, Jason Hull. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray. If you want to get in on the action, call Team MD now at 1-866-472-5788. Now back to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
I'm the truth and these other boys phony. You're
all right, Lonnie, keep her up fine. Come on, Lonnie, keep talking. We got 15 minutes to go here. Close. moving on, we were talking about Ty Green. And I was saying, you said 2 years ago he could have won. I tell you, 14 years ago, I thought I should have won.
Years ago is not 14 years. I mean, this was in recent times. Now, Phil did win unanimously. I'm not saying Kai should have won. I'm saying he could have won.
I like the could have, but now we're moving forward. So when you make predictions, you don't look back. You look ahead. Is Kai Green the one that was going to win? Is Dennis Wolf posing the greatest challenge?
I'm thinking that, now keep in mind, I have not seen any of these guys.
Neither have I.
I don't know who's in shape, who's not, who's ahead of the game. Other than Dexter, I take that back. Dexter Jackson will be in great shape. I'm thinking that, you know, Dennis Wolf may provide the biggest challenge this year.
To Phil Heath, not to Kai.
Yes, it's now or never. I mean, Dennis is no kid. He's been floating around 7, 8, 9 years now. What, 35, 36 years old? As Elvis said,
yeah.
It's now or never.
What are we, does age even factor in anymore? I mean, does that even have any relevance with somebody like Dexter, who's definitely a top six guy?
Well, age, it's he's in his prime. In the past, I'd say he's over the hill at 36. Now I'm saying he's in his prime at 36. So he's prime for an upset. The big bad wolf. Now that left calf, I don't know where it went. And that may be enough to prevent him from ever winning the Sandow. Some people criticized me when I said last year's Olympia, because of that lack of calf development, he should not beat Phil Heath. And then they said, well, he won the Arnold, and you thought he should have won the Arnold, but Phil Heath and Kai Green were not in the Arnold.
But let's keep things in perspective. I mean, your calves are bigger than Dexter Jackson's, and he won it in 2008. I mean, let's keep it. I love Dexter
better than Dennis Wolf.
I love Dexter, man, but he doesn't have any calves. Him and Dennis were right there together. I do think, though, the surprise of the contest is going to have to come from Big Rami if he rips it up, and that's a bigger if, because, again, this is a guy that's still, I think, is he barely 30 years old, not even?
Well, I don't know what the birth certificate says. He's around 30, I guess, according to the stats. This guy is huge, obviously. And, he made his debut last year. I think he finished, eighth? And he came back to win the Night of Champ, New York Pro this year, 2 years in a row. But I haven't seen it yet, him dialed in as good as he could be. So I'm not going to put him into that contenders role just yet.
Yeah. Wow, I mean, I had him in the top six last year, just for the record. I mean, I know Jay Cutler got six. I had Big Rami in sixth place at the least.
I had Winkler in six.
And Winkler was very good, and obviously I wouldn't have argued with that, but I haven't seen that Winkler since, and it's been a year now, and he's coming off that motorcycle accident. That being said, I think if we're going to go with a foregone conclusion that this is Phil Heath's contest, like, in the past, I mean, you win the Olympia, nobody's gotten beaten since Dexter Jackson in 2007. That was 7 years ago. It'll be eighth this September. We're dealing with second, third, and fourth place. And those are huge places because, again, I mean, second place pays more first place prize money than when Dorian Yates was winning.
First place is all the way up to $275,000, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, second place in the Olympia is a very important place to be, regardless of who that is. If Kai Green
winds up second, $200,000, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure, but if Kai Green winds up second again, he's going to join Flex Wheeler for a three-time first runner-up. And of course, we know that Kevin Lavrone was a four-time Olympia runner-up, and Jay Cutler a six-time Olympia runner-up. It's not a bad place to be, but if that happened to Kai Green, and you're his coach, are you telling Kai, listen, you need to go to that Arnold Classic, because if Phil Heath's not there, you're the number two guy, that's a show that you should be doing every year and rack yourself some more Arnold Classic wins. Would that be your advice to Kai Green?
I think they should all do the Arnold Classic anyway. Now, I'm a little biased. I posted the show since 1993, but what a tremendous event put on by the guy that really is the guy that made bodybuilding what it is today, Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's a great contest. It doesn't have the prize money that the Olympia does, but it's not chopped liver. I think it's $130,000 plus other perks winning that show. I mean, that's the second best show in the world. They're 6 months apart. Why not do both of them?
Well, I mean, that's easy for a journalist to say. I've done both three times. I could tell you, all three times is almost like a near-death experience for the bodybuilder who has to sacrifice the holiday time. You know how much I love food. It's a very, it's another mind game. I get it that we're professionals and we're bodybuilders, but when you sacrifice your summer, sacrifice your winter, I mean, you've got, you factor in the business and the travel and the family and all that. You don't get that stuff back. That's partly why, Lonnie, I only did three Arnold Classics, because it was, I was losing too much of my life, quality of life, over the holidays, which you don't get back. You know, you don't get that time back. So a lot of the bodybuilders struggle with that. When they give themselves to the world by doing the Olympia, it's real hard to give more to that Arnold Classic, which is why I have so much respect for Phil, or for Dexter Jackson. I mean, he's done it. He won four, but he's done it like 11 or 12 times. And Dexter, man, he just continually surprises me with what he's
done. Yeah, but Jay Cutler did it. You know, he won the Arnold three times. And yep. Still won the Olympia several times. And I think your best year, a lot of people forgot about 1990 for you. You know, they talk about 93, your best look, 96. I think if there was ever an Olympia where you could have won it, it's the one nobody's talking about, the 1990 Olympia. You won the Ironman. You won the Arnold, and then there was a problem at the Arnold with the test. So you lost that, but you still won it. Yeah. And I had you winning the Olympia in 1990 in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I go back there sometimes. My memory will take me back to that place. And all I can remember is, I've always said this about myself and other bodybuilders, is that the guy with the fewest flaws. I thought that year I had a narrow back. I lost some width along the way, and that's what Haney's forte is. But when you stood everybody up against each other, I mean, you could see how much Lee Haney had lost. It was a shell of what he was from 1989. And I could see how small Labrada was appearing and flat that he appeared. So when I took the sum of the total parts and came down to the fewest flaws, of course, I look back at 1990 as a bittersweet year, because I thought I had both of them in an argument. And, you know, it's nostalgic for me. But now when I look forward, I judge these shows, I look at these contests, I go with the guy with the fewest flaws, and I don't care about who they are or what their resume is, and that's why they win. I don't judge them based on what they look like last year, because it's not fair. So Phil Heath, to lose this show, has got to come in watery and soft. Kai Greene's got to come in my opinion, 5 to 10 pounds lighter. And that's a two-man show. Dennis Wolf, if he does what he did last year, he beats Kai Greene for second place. But does he beat Phil Heath? That's the million-dollar question. But let's put all that aside, because we can talk to him, we're blue in the face. Joe and Ben are not here to watch this Olympia. Of course, we'd love Mike Matarazzo and some of the other guys, Barry DeMay, Mike Quinn, Gary Stridham. I mean, these are names that made the Olympia weekend phenomenal. Historically, Francis Benfato, Richie Gaspari. I'm hoping that when we go, and this is me throwing out a line to you, because I know you're going to be there. I don't want to hear the excuses. You have to be there for the fans, for Joe, for all of those guys that can't go, that would have loved or given their right arm to be there. This Olympia, I want this to be a reunion of everybody that has a heartbeat and everybody that's put in the time and the blood and the sweat to make the Olympia what it is, for Joe and for Ben to come out, have a cup of coffee, have a beer, whatever it is that you bring to the table. You bring a huge impact and influence to the fans. We need you there. I need you to commit on the air right now that come hell or high water, Lonnie,
you're going to be walking that expo.
I don't care if you go to the contest, but you're going to make yourself available for the fans, because we don't know. Look,
I'll make myself available for dinner.
All right, Lonnie Cheaper comes to the Olympia. He's dinner on Sean Ray. Say yes.
Holy smokes.
You're not my date, but just tell me you're going to be there.
I'll do my best.
We need the commitment, all right?
I'll be there.
But I'm going to do the talking for you. Lonnie's already committed. All right, we're going to come back next week. I have another special guest talking about the Mr. Olympia weekend as we count it down. I'm going to bring out somebody, a blast from the past, somebody that lived it and walked it and talked it, and you won't know who that is until next week. Unfortunately, with that segue, I will not be here, Lonnie. I'm headed to Australia.
You're on the road again?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be here. Look, I take it back. I will be here I'm dedicated. I'm going to be here for the show, but I'll be as a guest. I'm going to have a guest host.
Wow, you're
It's a 15-hour, 16-hour journey.
You handle jet lag pretty easy, man. I got to give you credit.
Well, I got to give Steve Blackman credit, man. He got the right guy for the job. I love to talk, but I love talking bodybuilding the most. I'll be back here a week from now with another guest to talk about the bodybuilding history and what we got going on for MDTV along with Jordan Blackman. We're going to get some candid interviews, some predictions from the bodybuilders, so stay tuned to the No Bull Forum. Look for some interviews on the guys talking about the lead-up to the 50th anniversary of Joe Weider, Mr. Olympia weekend. And, of course, we'll try to get come back with Gary Udit to get a little bit of a preview of what's happening in Pittsburgh. There is some pro card ramifications. There is a pro masters competition taking place. With upwards of 900 athletes, it's got to be the biggest thing that he's ever had to deal with. Before we get to the national championships at the end of the year, Lonnie, that's going to take place in Miami this year. And, of course, Lou Ferrigno, he's throwing his hat into the arena. I'm trying to get Lou Ferrigno on here to talk about the Lou Ferrigno Legacy Competition coming up Thanksgiving weekend right here in Santa Barbara. Lonnie, any parting words for our fans here at MD Radio?
No, just, you know, once again, I just want to say what a nice time I had in Baltimore. You know, you're right. I'm not crazy about flying. I never was, but I don't do it quite as much as I used to. But this was an enjoyable trip, and I just... really enjoyed the people there, from the hotel to your staff to the fans and the athletes. They were all very, very nice and said some very flattering things. And to this, you know, I believe his name was Peter Gordon, was the head judge. Gary wasn't able to make it in because he's got this show he's dealing with. And, you know, it was, I'm really happy I went.
All right, man. Well, thank you for coming out and tune in to Tuesday night. Tomorrow, for those of you on the West Coast,
well, I can't wait to see you tomorrow night. I won't miss that show for anything. I tell you, I take bets, not on who's going to win the Olympia, what shirt you're going to have on when you do those sit-down interviews. I love those shirts.
Tune in to Lifetime tomorrow, 10, 9 Central, for Raising Asia. For Lonnie Teeper, this has been Sean Ray here at MD Radio. Tune in next week as we count it down to the Joe Weider Mr. Olympia weekend in September. With that, peace. I'm out.
You've been listening to MD Radio, a look at the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. Join Sean Ray again next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.